This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Your Honor, just a couple of housekeeping matters. I have the medical records from Women and Infants Hospital. I thought I offered that as an exhibit, but it's only marked for ID, so can I offer that now?
Come with any objection?
I have that marked in this exhibit 220.
Yeah, I don't. This just says Exhibit F, though. That's why I usually mess up on these things.
There was another smaller packet that's not a binder that counsel offered yesterday that's been marked as Exhibit 220. There, it's up there.
Okay. All right, why don't we keep that marked for identification? If for some reason there's something different between Exhibit 220 and the identification, we could enter it. Okay. All right, if you need to offer anything additional, just let me know.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Don. The other thing, Your Honor, that what I would ask is that there has been a lot of reference to the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 5TR, especially as it relates to bipolar and related disorders. There's not an awful lot, but there's like probably 15 pages of single space typing, and it's really hard for people to absorb it. I'd like to offer that section of the DSM just as an exhibit, so if somebody wanted to look at it, they could.
I would object. We have witnesses to testify about that.
All right. Why don't we mark that for identification? I guess the...
That's my book, though. I need it.
Oh, I don't want to take away your book. why don't we readdress that.
Okay, sure. Yep.
In regards to that, and if we're going to do it, it would just be portions of the
DSM-5. Yeah, so it would only be that one section.
But we'll see. Well, I'll give the Commonwealth the opportunity to be heard.
Okay, thank you. So you, in the course of your employment at the South Shore Health, is it?
Yes.
How many times did Lindsay meet with you?
Meet with me was three.
And how many times did she meet with, does that include medical?
Yes, I saw her twice, telehealth once in person.
And do you know how many times that, you know that she had a psychiatrist that had been treating her since end of September, early October, right?
I knew that she had a psychiatrist that treated her in September.
And who was that?
Dr. Tufts.
And did you know that she continued to see Dr. Tufts through October, November, December, the same time that she was reaching out to you guys for help, too?
I was aware she took the Zoloft in October. I was not aware she was still seeing Dr. Tufts in November. And I knew she called her in December.
You would agree with me that young woman came to you people for help, right?
Yes.
Okay. And she was very, very forthright. In other words, if you wanted her to sign a HIPAA form, she'd sign it, right?
Right.
And she would answer your questions to your perspective in an honest fashion.
Yes.
You didn't really hide anything.
Nope.
She told you all about the medications that she had been on and her fears and concerns about the medications, right?
Correct.
She described for you, as District Attorney brought out, what she felt her symptomology was, including suicidal ideation, worrying about suicide, feeling heavy, lethargic, you can't get out of bed, all of that stuff, right? Correct?
Correct.
And one of the things that you had left us with towards the end of your testimony is the fact that you were very willing, if you will, to work in tandem with other providers. In other words, you were concerned about Did you ever get access to Tufts' medical records?
No.
Do you know how many times she saw Dr. Tufts?
I do not.
Would it surprise you if I told you that she saw Dr. Tufts 14 times in the time frame of October, or the end of September, October, November, December, and then January, 4 months?
Yes.
And that's 14 times plus the three that she saw you. Is that right?
Yes.
So that's 17 times that this young lady had access to healthcare providers for her mental health issues, correct?
Correct.
And that would be within a compressed period of time. I know it's the last week, I believe, in September, but October, November, December, and then January, right?
Yes.
And during that period of time, you're aware that she was provided many, many, many prescriptions for antipsychotics, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, benzodiazepines, all of that, right?
I'm aware she was prescribed other medications.
She was what?
Prescribed other medications.
Did you ask what other medications there were?
Yes.
And did she tell you?
Yes.
Did she tell you who prescribed them?
Yes.
It's pretty easy to get a list from CVS, right?
Yes.
And did you have any difficulty determining who was providing the prescriptions for all of these medications?
No.
And did you know that, in fact, it was Jennifer Tufts that prescribed the... Sertraline, September 15th of 2022, 30 count, 25 milligrams, was Jennifer Tufts. You knew that?
I did.
You knew that Jennifer Tufts on October 21st, 7 count of lorazepam. You know that?
I did.
And 5 days later, Jennifer Tufts prescribed on October 26th, hydroxyzine, 25 milligrams with a 30 count. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Did you know that on the same day, Tufts prescribed 30 count of lorazepam? Did you know that?
I would have known that, yes, checking the PMP for controlled substances, yes.
You do recall that you check with it?
Yes.
When you download, do you download that information and kind of put it in the file, the file?
No.
So is this your memory that you believe that you check the PMP?
I do routinely check the PMP.
You might routinely check, but did you check?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Don't download it. You don't keep it with the medical records, right?
It's a box you can click in the medical record, and you can check that you reviewed it.
Okay. Is it in your medical record that you reviewed it?
I'm not sure how it would have gotten printed out. It doesn't, like, go into my note, but it is a box that I would have checked.
A box in the computer?
Yes.
Okay. October 26th, buspirone, 5 milligrams, 30 count, same day by Tufts. You knew that?
Buspirone?
Yeah.
I was not sure that it was Dr. Tufts that had recommended the buspirone.
Okay, so if I suggest to you that the prescriptions that we have in evidence on the chart indicates that on October 26th, Dr. Tufts prescribed a 30 count of buspirone, would that either refresh your memory, or would you accept that as being a medical history?
I would accept that.
Okay. And what is buspirone?
It is a medication used to treat anxiety.
Okay. And lorazepam, what is that?
Benzodiazepine.
And hydroxyzine, what is that?
It is an antihistamine medication.
And lorazepam, again, prescribed on October 21st as well as 26th by Tufts. That's the same thing you just told us what lorazepam is, right?
Yes.
Sertraline, of course, is Prozac. Is that right?
Zoloft.
Zoloft, Prozac. They're both SSRIs, right?
Yes.
So from October 21st up through November 9th, she was prescribed all of this group of drugs until she saw a Kavon Izadipana, I-Z-A-D-P-A-N-A-H. Do you know who that person is?
They work in the emergency department at Social Health.
All right. And that would have been on November 16th when she went into the emergency department, right?
Yes.
Prescribed trazodone, 50 milligrams, right?
Yes.
And then she started to consult with your clinic around the 25th of November. That would be around Thanksgiving or so, correct? November 25th?
I believe her first visit with Julia was November 21st.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that it was around that time in November that she started to consult with your clinic, correct?
Correct.
You know that she was referred to your clinic by her mother-in-law, Pat's mother, who was a labor and delivery nurse.
Yes, I am aware.
Referred her to Julie Paul, who kind of stepped in for a very short period of time to try to help out, right?
Yes.
And then Julie left, went to New Hampshire to continue her work, and you picked up on November 30th of 22, is that right?
November 29th.
On November 30th of 22, you wrote a script for quetiapine, 30 count, is that right?
Yes.
And what is quetiapine?
Seroquel.
You also, a week later, wrote a script for diazepam, 5 milligrams. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the next day, you wrote a script for, December 6th, you wrote a script for diazepam, 5 milligrams, right?
Correct.
December 7th, you wrote a script for diazepam, 5 milligrams, right?
Correct.
December 7th, again, you wrote a script for quetiapine, 30 count, right?
I would need to check my
records. You can look at anything you want. If okay. you have your records, feel free, please.
Okay. You said December
7th. I'm looking at quetiapine, 30 count, 100 milligrams.
I don't believe it was a 30 count of 100 milligrams.
Do you remember writing quetiapine script for 100 milligrams?
I do. I believe the quantity was 22.
22. Okay. So on December 7th of 22, you wrote a script for quetiapine, and forgive me, I'm sorry, what is that again?
Seroquel.
Seroquel. For 100 milligrams, right?
Yes.
And why did you write the script on November 30th for quetiapine, 25 milligrams, and then about a week later increase it to 100 milligrams?
On November 30th, I had anticipated utilizing it over a four-week course of treatment for sleep and anxiety, but her clinical symptoms, presentations changed, and we opted to use it for mood stabilization.
And who's we?
Me.
Okay. And were you working with anybody else, any psychiatrists or anybody?
No.
So when a person comes to your clinic as a woman who has recently had a baby or is within that postpartum range of time and presents with the symptomology that she presented, is that something that would give you cause for concern? Suicidal ideation?
I in no way want to minimize what Lindsay experienced, but it's common for us to treat.
It's common to treat women in that fashion that are postpartum?
Postpartum who may have suicide.
Keeps cutting off the witness before she gets an answer. May she complete her answer?
Sure. As I've said before, let's only talk one at a time. You finish your answer, and then we'll go to the question.
Go ahead.
Her symptoms were serious, and it's not uncommon for me to treat women with serious symptoms in the postpartum period.
Okay. 2 days later, you prescribed 8 count, 5 milligrams of diazepam. Is that right?
2 days from December 7th?
Yeah, it was December 9th.
December 9th. Yes.
4 days later, you prescribed more diazepam. Is that correct? December 13th?
Correct. That would have been 2 milligrams?
Yes. And then jump ahead to December 19th, you prescribed 14 count, 2 milligrams of diazepam. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then December 19th, you prescribed 300 milligrams of quetiapine, 30 count, right?
Correct.
And that was on December 19th. 3 days later, on December 21st, you prescribed additional quetiapine, 100 milligrams, 14 count, right?
Correct.
And then 1 day later, you prescribed more quetiapine, 25 milligrams of 14 count, right?
Correct.
as far as your prescriptions continued on, if we can jump ahead, you continued to treat her. And on January 13th, you prescribed 2 milligrams of diazepam, 7-count, right? That would be on January 13th?
I did not prescribe that on January 13th.
All right, if I suggest to you that Rebecca Gelada has a script for January 13th of diazepam, that doesn't refresh your memory?
Would it have been a script that I had sent previously that hadn't been filled at the original date?
Well, I believe the records would indicate that. We'll make a note of it. January 13th, diazepam. How about January 16th? Do you recall prescribing diazepam to her? 2 milligrams, 3-count.
No.
Diazepam on the 19th of January, 2 milligrams, 14-count.
No.
No? So you're not able to prescribe medications. Somebody else can't use your name, right?
Right.
Okay. And you have the DEA license to prescribe medications, correct?
Correct.
Now, one of the things that you went through was a lot of, obviously, it's a little confusing with the names of the various drugs. And the district attorney said to you blithely, she said, well, she's a nurse, so she knows what those drug names mean. Do you recall that question?
I do.
Yeah. And you just said, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're assuming that a woman who gets her RN at the age of 24 in a one-year program and then works for 7 years as a labor and delivery nurse is familiar with these names and what they are, what drugs they are?
She seemed to be familiar with them, yes, she understood.
Did you know that she was Googling 60, 70, 100 times a night what benzodiazepines are, what Seroquel is, what all of these medications are?
I did not know that.
Did you ever ask her where she acquired what appeared to be, apparently to you, her ability to know what these medications are?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Well, you wouldn't know the medications that a labor and delivery nurse uses when they're helping a woman who's giving birth, would you?
Not necessarily.
Okay. In any event, one of the things that you left us with is the fact that you were very, I think the word was, invested in Lindsay Clancy and were concerned about her treatment, right?
Correct.
You knew that she had gone to the Rhode Island program for Women and Infants Center, Behavioral Health Day Program in Providence, Rhode Island. You knew that, right?
I did.
And you basically gave her the referral. You didn't make the referral. I think it was Latasha Dukes that might have done that.
Correct.
So you were aware of the fact that a recommendation was made to Lindsay that she reach out to someone else for help, right?
Lindsay made me aware of that, yes.
And she needed help, didn't she?
Yes.
And she went to Women's and Infants Hospital on December 20th, right?
She did.
And was she treated at Women and Infants?
I don't believe so.
Why not?
I wouldn't want to speculate or assume, but it seemed to be her intake appointment.
Her what?
Her intake appointment.
Okay. So without assuming or speculating, you referred her to this provider, right?
Yes.
So you have this woman who you know has been seeing Dr. Tufts, a psychiatrist, right?
Right.
You knew that. Mm-hmm. You didn't get access to Tufts' records. You didn't know what Tufts was doing. But you knew that for a period of time before she saw you, she was dealing with a psychiatrist, right?
Yes.
You knew that she was a woman who had just given birth like 5 months ago, right?
Yes.
You knew that she was obviously in trouble. She was sick, right?
Yes.
You told us that she was suffering from, and your words were, a mental health illness that was very real. And you told her that this will get better. And that was in December of 2022.
Yes.
So when you referred her needing help to this Women's and Infants program in Rhode Island, and she went because that's what she was told to do, what happened at Women and Infants Program?
I can't speak to what happened at Women and Infants.
Why not?
Because I was not a part of that assessment.
What does that mean?
I did not see the assessment, and I did not speak with Dr. Diaz.
Why?
Lindsay had informed me that she was going to be at the program for 2 weeks.
She was hoping to be at the program for 2 weeks, right?
She told me she was going to be at the program for 2 weeks.
But she was turned away after about 8 hours of sitting there in an assessment and sitting in a group session. And she was turned away because of their concern that she was suffering from... Well, let me ask you, what was their diagnosis?
I'm not sure.
Did you ever find out?
I have not.
Does it matter to you as a treating person that I think your words were is invested in Lindsay Clancy's care at that time? Did it matter to you why she didn't get accepted into the program?
It did.
Why was it?
I do not know their diagnosis.
Did you know that she had been diagnosed? You have different diagnoses, right? Like general anxiety disorder or general anxiety, GAD. And then you have, is it a differential? Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
What does that
mean? Yes. It means a differential in medicine could be patient comes in with a cough. What are your differentials? Differential might be bronchitis, pneumonia, strep throat. So it's different things, different diagnoses you consider.
Did you know that, in fact, they wouldn't accept her into the postpartum program because of their concern that she had been over-medicated by drugs and they wanted to find out?
I can't speak to that.
Did you know that she was diagnosed as diagnosis depression due to adverse drug effects?
I cannot speak to that.
Do you know, invested as you were, that on December, strike that, on December 20th, the very same day that she had finished being evaluated, woman you were invested in, had been evaluated by Dr. Diaz that you recommended or you mentioned, that in fact, looking at the exhibit, that they recommended tapering Seroquel, starting 200 milligrams tonight, follow up with outpatient provider. Of note, we attempted to reach current outpatient provider Rebecca Gelada, but did not receive a call back.
I never received a call from Women and Infants.
So this medical record from Women and Infants saying that they called Rebecca Gelada and never got a call back, your memory is that they never called you?
They never called me. I absolutely would have called them back.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, regardless, you never talked to anybody from Women and Infants, did you? Whether they called you or whether you reached out to them being invested?
I did not. I know our program re-referred her a few days later.
I'm going to offer this now, Your Honor. I think just...
It's already in evidence.
Yeah, well, just...
But Mark... We'll keep it as an exhibit for identification. You can double-check, make sure the pages that have been referred here are contained within, is it Exhibit 220?
Yep.
And if not, then we can admit the second.
Okay. Thank you. One of the things that you is a takeaway from your treatment of Lindsay is that she was, I think your words were that she was scared and thought that starting these drugs, it was scary, were her words, right?
Yes.
And at no time did it occur to you that Lindsay was doctor shopping or trying to get drugs. She was trying to basically get off drugs, right?
Correct.
One of the things that you had mentioned is that the Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts book is something that you guys would give out to women when they would come into your program.
Yes.
And hopefully it would be a good source enough to read things and maybe get some comfort from it. Right?
Yes.
This is not, in your opinion, something that is indicative of like being a smoking gun.
No.
Police officer would seize it and the search warrant is
No.
This is something you guys provide people to just help them out, right?
Yes, yeah.
And just a couple of things. So on November 17th, she had an office visit with you. Is that correct?
Not on November 17th.
Okay. And the U.S. Oshawa Medical Center, right?
Yes, that may have been her PCP.
Okay. Is that her PCP? Is that a person that would be under the umbrella of the South Shore Medical Center?
Yes.
Would that be Kimberly Tocchio?
Yes.
Okay. So you must have read Kimberly Tocchio's records, I would imagine, right?
Yes.
And you know that she was seen, the record indicates that she was seen by a psychiatrist, and this would be November 17th, note, started Zoloft 25, which was then increased to 50 milligrams, right?
Yes.
And she took the Zoloft 50 milligrams for one night, and was unable to sleep, and was discontinued because of the effect that it had on her, right?
Yes.
Now, one of the things that you had mentioned is that it's important to determine, and you did have thoughts of possibility that she was bipolar. Is that correct?
Correct.
And one of the things that is contraindicated to someone who does suffer from bipolar, whether it's one or bipolar two, is that you do not place them on a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor drug, such as Prozac or Zoloft, right?
Correct.
Because it can have an effect on them, isn't that right?
Correct.
And what's the effect it can have on them?
It can cause what we consider rapid cycling, meaning you can swing from mania symptoms to depression symptoms relatively rapidly.
On November 21st, did she have a meeting with you all? If you recall, looking at the records, did she meet with Julie Paul?
Yes.
Okay. And she gave Julie a history of what she had been going through. Is that correct?
Correct.
And in that history and in her talks with Julie, she had disclosed the fact that one of the things that she did in November was took a marijuana gummy, one gummy, to try to sleep, right?
Correct.
And again, her medical tests, blood tests, urine tests, everything showed that she had no alcohol, no THC, nothing on board, but she still disclosed the fact that to try to get some sleep, she took one gummy in November, right?
Yes.
So again, she's reporting, you know, what, trying to be honest with you people as a provider, correct?
Yes.
And the scales that counsel asked you about, you were talking about the depression scale, you were talking about the Edinburgh scale, and I think we all know that the Edinburgh scale is geared for an evaluation of a person, of a woman who is in that postpartum period, and you evaluate whether or not they are, as a result of being postpartum, severely depressed, right?
Yes.
And you indicated that at some point her Edinburgh scale was initially, what was it, 15, 17, if you know?
Initially at my visit, my first initial with her.
Yeah, what was her Edinburgh scale the first time you saw her?
17.
Okay. And that would be moderate?
Moderate.
Okay. And then she had another Edinburgh scale after that, correct?
Correct.
And when was that, if you know?
December 6th.
And what is EPDS? What does that mean?
Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Scale.
All right. So would you look at November 21st, please, which would be, so November 21st, she was administered a Edinburgh test, right?
On the 21st. That would have been at Julie's appointment. I don't have that in front of me.
If I told you that, well, on November 21st, it's a short period of time after November 17th, did they admit, they, whether it's Julie or somebody else, administer an Edinburgh test to her?
Yes.
And what was the result?
23.
That's severely depressed, isn't it?
Yes.
So in like 6 days, she decompensated from Edinburg scale 17 to Edinburg scale 23, right?
So she was 23 on November 21st.
Right.
And 17 on November 29th.
Okay. So when you see a patient that's come to you and has an Edinburg scale of 23 and an Edinburg scale a couple of days later, that would be, what was it?
17.
And what was it when you first saw it? You referenced it before, 17?
17.
Yeah. That's still pretty high, isn't it?
It's high, yes.
Would that give you pause in conjunction with the symptomology that she's referring to and self-reporting what she's feeling? I mean, the fact that she has a 23 on the Edinburg scale, which is very high, and then followed up a couple of days later by a 17, taken in conjunction with what she was saying her symptoms were. That's of a concern, isn't it?
Yes.
So on November 20th, which would be the day before that Edinburgh scale of 23, and the jury will have access to all these records, she was reporting struggling with postpartum anxiety, right?
I can't speak to
that. Okay, that's fair enough. We'll go to when you treated her.
Yes.
Did you have a chance to review Julie's notes?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when was the first time that you actually met with Lindsay?
November 29th.
Okay. Which would have been after Thanksgiving, obviously, right?
Yes.
And you would have reviewed the records up to that point, right?
Yes.
So one of the things that you would have reviewed was what she had indicated or reported to Nicole Harden Francis. Do you know her?
Yes.
And who is Nicole Harden Francis?
She's the nurse at our program.
All right. And this would be on November 28th that she was speaking with Nicole, the nurse. You read the report before you met with Lindsay on the 29th, right?
Right.
So you knew that she had been reporting panic symptoms, that she was disoriented, that she was forgetful, that she was not connected to her body. Is what she told her, right?
I would have to review that just to be accurate. That's correct.
Okay. And would you agree with me that symptomology of mania, especially when incurred or encountered by a woman within the postpartum period, that's one of the symptoms, is being disoriented, right?
Not necessarily.
How about maybe a little bit?
Could be confused if you're manic.
Yeah. How about forgetful? That's an issue, isn't it?
Not necessarily a symptom of mania.
Okay. How about not connected to her body? What does that mean?
I'm not sure what that means.
So if you have a patient who's coming to see you, who's indicated the day before that she has the panic symptoms, disoriented, forgetful, not connected to her body, wouldn't you ask her what she meant by that?
Yes.
Okay. So when you saw her on November 29th, you diagnosed that she had postpartum anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm.
Adjustment insomnia, right?
Correct.
And when you met with her, you noted that over the last 2 weeks, you asked her about how she had been feeling, and she said she was feeling nervous, anxious, and on edge, she said nearly every day, right? That's November 29th. That would be under screenings?
Yes, she was.
I would give you a page number, but they don't give us page numbers. She told you, and you can pull it up if you have it there, that she was not able to stop or control worrying, and that had been for several days at least, right?
Correct.
And she was worrying and stressing about things, worrying about different things every day, right?
Nearly every day, yes.
Couldn't relax nearly every day. This is a questionnaire form that you have, right?
Yes.
Being so restless nearly every day, correct?
Correct.
Asked if she was annoyed or irritable, and she said not at all, sure. Like she didn't believe that she was a person that would be irritable or angry with people, right?
Yes.
And then feeling afraid as if something awful might happen, and she got that GAD 7 score of 14. Is that correct?
Correct.
So what does a GAD score of 14 tell you on November 29th?
Moderate anxiety.
And then you ask about in the last 7 days, trying to get a history, she denied definitely not so much now that she was able to laugh or see the funny side of things, right?
Right.
And that she was asked, is she looking forward with enjoyment to things? And she responded, hardly at all, right?
Yes.
Blaming herself when things go wrong. She says, yeah, some of the time. Yep.
Yes.
Anxious and worried for no good reason. Yes, correct?
Yes.
Scared and panicky for no good reason. Yes, correct?
Yes.
Then they asked if she felt sad or miserable, if she was a miserable person. And she said, no, not at all, right?
Right.
Did she indicate that on that date you gave her the EPDS Edinburgh test and she had an Edinburgh score, as we said, of 17, right?
Yes.
All right. And then the medications that you prescribed to her, we've already got an evidence. The jury will be able to look at the actual scripts in the exhibit without going through every single day. The next time you saw her was November 30th, is that right?
I messaged with her on November 30th, yes.
Okay. And you indicated that if you're not sleeping well with Valium, no need to continue it. I'll prescribe a short taper. And you went on about tapering and 5 milligrams of Valium to 2.5 milligrams and no benzos. And
that was not on November 30th.
Okay. Does it say on the record, are you looking where it says patient message in the perinatal behavioral health program of South Shore Health, November 30, 2022?
Yes, I'm looking at the messages.
Okay. So is it a different date that you sent that message? It says November 30th on it, right? I just don't know internally if you guys had different...
Oh, I understand. Oh. At the top, it says November 30th. Okay. More specific, it'll say the dates, but the header will say November 30th. So I understand.
Okay. And basically, you indicated that you were going to send along information about bipolar 1 or bipolar 2, which actually would be what's known as a bipolar spectrum disorder. Is that correct?
Yes, that was on December 7th.
Okay, but it's underneath November 30th, so forgive me for looking at it that way.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's all right, no problem. So one of the things with the mania that you refer to and that you talk about is excessive activity, is that it? Excessive cleaning sometimes, right?
Sometimes.
Excessive exercise?
Sometimes.
Did you know that after she had Callan, that within a matter of a couple of weeks... That she ran a 5K?
No, I did not know that.
And that nobody wanted her to, including Pat, but she just had to get out there and run and did.
Objection.
No overall.
You know that?
I did not.
Is that something that would be important to know? I mean, as far as whether or not a person is in that manic stage where it's post-delivery and that's a significant artifact, if you will, of exercising, right?
It would have been something I would have considered.
Okay. And as I said, you were pretty much the only one that actually considered bipolar spectrum disorder of all the doctors that she had seen. You know that, right? Are you aware of that? All right. Never mind. That's right. She's going to object. That's okay. So the symptoms that you noted were mania. It says mania characterized by exaggerated excitement, hyperactivity, and racing scattered thoughts, right?
Yeah.
So what is... Go ahead.
Was that from my note?
I'm looking at the same thing that we've been looking at, which is...
Oh, the information I sent her on bipolar.
Yeah, it says, yes. Hi, Lindsay, and then your note, right?
Mm-hmm. I may suggest maybe showing the witness what he's referring to.
She has it in front of her.
Yeah. I think I understand what he's referencing, but so, thank you.
If the witness has a problem in regards to that and you need to look at some, just let me know.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you move ahead to, I think, the message portal or whatever it's called, on November 30th, it's captioned Stopping Remeron.
Yes.
And okay, you're with me. And it says, no, this would go to the fact that she was still not sleeping. It was a huge problem for her, right?
Yes.
And she told you in her message thing, no, the weird thing is I don't feel tired at all.
Correct.
And that's one of the things that you had told us earlier is a symptom, correct?
Correct.
A person that is not getting sleep but doesn't feel tired.
Correct.
What is the symptom of?
It's a symptom of mania that we look for.
Okay. And when we looked for that mania, did you notice that? And did you factor that into your diagnoses?
Yes.
Okay. How many times, if you recall, did Pat come with his wife to meet with you? Was it three?
He came to a visit once. I believe I spoke with him and Lindsay on the phone twice.
Would you agree with me that, as counsel asked, did he get permission to be there? And you indicated no, that you would welcome the third-party contact, right?
Correct.
And did it appear to you that he was very, very invested in her care and was very scared and worried?
Yes.
And he was complaining about the fact that he believed, that they believed, that she was being over-medicated, right?
I believe he was concerned about her symptoms. He felt that they started once she started being medicated initially.
Right, because she indicated that when she first started taking the SSRI back in October, I believe, that she ended up having it increased.
Mm-hmm.
And then had a period of almost 2 days where there was no sleep whatsoever. That was one of the instances, right?
Yes.
She also, counsel had asked you, and you did not recall her saying horrible intrusive thoughts. So if you would just look at November 30th patient message. It says, hi, Rebecca. And then it begins, I don't expect you to answer this until Monday.
I see that.
Okay. And then she says how she basically only slept for about 4 hours at the beginning of the night, 9:30, and then dozed off for 45 minutes and said, today, all day, I had horrible intrusive thoughts and deeply depressed, right?
Yes.
So when was the next time that you saw her after she sent that message on November 30th?
I would have seen her on December 6th. She had sent this message, I believe, on December 3rd, and I saw her on the 6th.
So on December 3rd, and again, it would be the way that they print this thing out. It has a date of November 30th, but then underneath it, it would be a different date of December 3rd. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And when you, as a an invested nurse practitioner, receive a message from a woman who is postpartum, who has been through what she's been through and the symptomology that she explained and the doctors that she's seen, not too very good results, you'd be concerned when you see a person saying, I have horrible intrusive thoughts, right?
Yes.
All right. So as a result of seeing on December 3rd that Lindsay Clancy, with her history, had been telling you that she had horrible intrusive thoughts, what did you do? Did you call her?
She had told me that she took the Ativan and now the thoughts were gone and she had felt good.
So.
But I did speak to her about it.
Yeah, but she told you that. She told you that in her message.
Right.
That she had today, all day, I had horrible intrusive thoughts. Deeply depressed, I finally took 0.5 of Ativan at 6 p.m., and the thoughts are gone, is what she told you, right?
Yes.
Did you ever bother to ask? I don't know. I mean, would you ask the patient what the horrible intrusive thoughts were?
I would have, yes.
Did you?
Yes.
What did she say?
She described them as thoughts of not wanting to be here.
How about, did she ever describe to you that she was hearing voices?
No.
How many people have you treated for postpartum psychosis?
Five.
And of those five people, did they hear voices?
Not all of them.
How about some of them?
Some of them.
And that's a real thing, isn't it?
Yes.
And visual hallucinations likewise?
Not all.
So with the voices, that would be an auditory hallucination?
Yes.
Visual hallucination, not all, but some?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's a real thing?
Yes.
So when she had horrible intrusive thoughts, did she say where these happened? Like, was she in the yard? Was she in her car? Did you ask her where and what? Or was it just that she just didn't want to be here anymore?
It was more that she didn't want to be here anymore.
Okay, did you ask her what that meant?
I did ask her if she had any plans or intent for suicide, which changed at different times during our treatment.
So on December 2nd, you have sent a note to Lindsay and said it, meaning what she was telling you in a prior communication. It sounds more like depression than side effects. That would be of drugs, right?
Correct.
It is not uncommon for me to hear, and then you quote, I have never felt anything like this before, end quote, or quote, I just don't feel like myself. All of this sounds like postpartum depression. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So she was expressing all of the symptomology of depression, what you believe would have been side effects, and you indicated that at this point, while you're working through it, this sounds like postpartum depression, right?
Correct.
And what would the symptomology of, what does postpartum depression mean, and what is its effect on a patient?
Postpartum depression is like depression at any time during a patient's life. However, there are some unique considerations. It typically occurs in the first 3 months after a person has a baby, but it can happen at any point in the first year. The considerations that are a little bit different than regular major depressive disorder are that there are significant hormone fluctuations that a person undergoes when they deliver a baby. Sometimes they breastfeed and they wean from breastfeeding, and that can set off additional hormone shifts. And it tends to be a very anxious presentation. And obsessive thoughts can occur with greater regularity in postpartum depression than they would with major depression outside of the postpartum period.
So as a result of this information, you prescribed medication to her?
After I sent her the information on the postpartum, would this still be December 2nd?
Looking at the form that you have, it would be, yes, but I don't know if it's another date that there's a message underneath it. So let's look at the record where it says that on December 7th.
7th,
yes.
Okay.
And that's where you talked about bipolar spectrum disorder, right?
Yes.
And that's where you talked about how people would have these feelings of goal-directed activity, overly talkative, racing thoughts, need for sleep, things of that nature, right?
Yes.
What was the end result of that? Did you prescribe medication for her?
I did.
And what was it?
Seroquel.
One of the things that you had mentioned is that you provided a mood chart, I think. Is that what you said, a mood chart? Is this it? Is that an indication so the jurors know that it's in the records? It's a horrible fact.
That looks accurate, yes.
Yeah. There it is, right there. See on the very top it says mood chart? What?
Yes.
All right, and on the top it says daily mood chart. And then you also provided another chart on that date. What is that? That's another variation of it?
It's the weekly mood chart.
Okay. So did you tell her to fill this out?
I suggested that she fill it out so we could keep track of her symptoms.
Okay. Do you remember if she filled it out when she spoke to you?
She did not speak to me about filling it out. after that, she did say she printed it out.
Okay. Did you ever ask to see it?
I don't recall.
Okay. On December 1st, you met with her, is that right? Oh, no, wait a minute. Christine Zappi. Who's Christina Zappi?
I believe she's also someone that works at Cell Shore Medical Center.
All right. Do you know that she saw Christine Zappi on December 1st? Christina. I'm sorry. It says Christina.
I'm not sure if she saw her for a visit that day.
Okay. Have you seen in the pool of records that you have that she did see this individual and noted that she had been dealing with the problems, the insomnia symptomology, for over a month and a half, and medications keep changing, and it doesn't seem like much is helping? Did you ever see that?
That does sound familiar.
Okay, so she was somewhat in, this is almost hand in glove with saying, I'm not being hurt, right?
Yes.
My idea. Did you see her on December 2nd, the next day?
I spoke to her on December 2nd.
Okay. And again, the district attorney kept asking you about, you know, she had the opportunity to come in and see you if she wanted to, and things of that nature, right?
Yes.
And would you agree with me that it's sometimes better to have a face-to-face actual meeting with a patient rather than just on the computer?
Yes.
Did you ever, if you recall, with all of the symptomology and deterioration going by week after week, say to her, yeah, I really think that we should get together in person?
Yes. So we met in person on the 6th, and our plan had been to meet in person on the 13th.
Okay. So that would be December 6th, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, December 2nd, you had a conversation with her on the phone. Is that right?
I believe it was just my chart messages.
Okay. So you see on where it says, again, it's got the big black letters, December 2nd, 22, and then underneath it, it says behavioral health history. Can you find that on your records? If you don't, that's fine. That would be the time that she indicated that she had been to the ER for anxiety symptoms as well as insomnia and heart palpitations. You remember that?
I don't see that.
Okay, well, then let's get it. Do you have... You have access to other staff notes and records, right?
I do. I only brought my own.
Okay, that answers that. So if I approach you...
Yes.
Can I see what you're showing her first? Sorry.
Sure. Let's look at
So this is from
12. Yeah. Latasha Dukes. Who's Latasha Dukes?
Latasha Dukes was a clinician at our program at the time.
All right. So am I looking at Latasha Dukes, MSW? What does that mean?
Master of Social Work.
All right. And does that indicate a date that Ms. Dukes saw Lindsay?
December 2nd.
All right. And on December 2nd, again, she was complaining of symptomology, she meaning Lindsay, having heart palpitations, right?
She's describing that she had heart palpitations and she went to the ER for anxiety symptoms.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
Yes.
And then she then went to the ER, and per patient's report, she has an addiction to Ativan, and that's why she can't sleep. And she also noted had weight loss, right?
Correct.
And panic attacks, right?
Correct.
So she's got a fear that she's on the benzodiazepines by script that she didn't want to be on, and she couldn't sleep, and she was losing weight, and all the other symptomology that we talked about, right?
Correct.
And that's in December.
Yes.
December 5, Nicole Hyden Francis had a chance to speak with Lindsay. And at that point, there was a recommendation that she might want to try INPTLOC. What does that mean?
Inpatient level of care.
Okay. And that would be... Nicole Hyden Francis, who's a nurse, was telling her that on December 5?
Yes.
Now, on, and again, I know you don't have the records from Latasha Dukes, so if I may approach.
You may.
on December 5, you correct me if I'm reading this wrong, this would be Letitia Dokes, December 5, right?
Correct.
Okay. And on that occasion, Letitia Dokes notes that she called Aspire Crisis Support, she meaning Lindsay, right?
Yes.
What is Aspire Crisis Support?
Aspire is the community mental health program that operates the local 24-hour emergency services program for psychiatric emergency services.
Okay. So when you, when I say you collectively, I mean psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, RNs from in the psychiatric world, tell patients that are in crisis that if you feel that you're going to have suicidal ideation or anything, you should call these numbers is what you people will give them, right?
Yes.
All right. She called Aspire Crisis Report Support, not once, but twice, right? If you know.
I'm aware of the one time she called.
Okay. But she was not given any help at all by Aspire, whoever they are, right?
I'm not aware of that.
Well, it says right in the records from Letitia that she met with an Aspire clinician virtually and was told that she did not meet the criteria for inpatient treatment due to not having an SI plan. What does that mean? They just told her, you're not laying on the ground with your throat cut, so we're not going to be able to help you?
Can't speak to what they told her.
So Aspire then recommended that she start or go to a day program. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the clinician said that he, from Aspire, would be sending the patient resources, right?
Correct.
But they never did they? If you know.
I don't know.
Further, Letitia notes that they review the sleep hygiene with the patient. Clinician provided patient suggestions for meditation, grounding, self-soothing techniques. What's a self-soothing technique? You know,
it might just be simple strategies to soothe yourself using any of your five senses.
And she notes, and again, this is on December 5th, that Pat, patient's husband, joined the visit, reporting that her anxiety had become significantly worse since starting the psychiatric medications. Did that say that?
That is what that says.
Okay. And in fact, when you spoke to Pat, he had told you that, in his quotation, his words would be, it was 10,000 times worse since she started this medication, right? If you know.
I don't recall him using that phrase.
But he was upset about the medication, wasn't he?
I would say he was concerned.
Do you recall that he said that you're turning her into a zombie?
I do not recall that he said that.
So would you say to the jury that he was concerned or he was pissed off about the medication and what it was doing to his wife?
Objection. Hasn't answered.
Now, overall.
I would say he was concerned.
Concerned? Okay. Did anybody address his concerns?
That day.
Any day?
I would say that day. I collaborated with them to take her off certain medications.
Okay. December 6th, you had a meeting with her. Is that correct?
Correct.
Again, she's diagnosed postpartum anxiety, right?
Correct.
Her EPDS score, as a result of being administered the Edinburgh test, was at that time a 21, right? That would be underneath office visit and perinatal behavioral health, above assessment and recommendations.
Correct.
And 21, how would you grade that?
Severe.
Severe what?
Severe signs of postpartum depression.
So know that she had lost over 15 pounds by that point?
I was aware she had lost some weight. I was not aware that it was 15 pounds.
Okay. So then there was another patient message on December 7th where she again was expressing concern about the drugs, and you indicated Either way, I continue to recommend the Valium taper, right?
Correct.
There was a period of time that she indicated that she wanted to get off the medication and get off the drugs, and you indicated, as you told us, that you were on vacation that week, right?
Yes.
You basically told her to tough it out and just hit me up when I come back from vacation, right?
No.
No.
Did you tell her to call you when you came back from vacation?
No, I asked that she try to hold off and wait for me to come back from vacation for the taper. She had wanted to taper it sooner.
All right. Do you have somebody that covers for you if you're on vacation?
Yes.
Does somebody cover?
She said that she was going to follow up with her other psychiatrist for the taper, but she did reach out to our program while I was on vacation.
Sorry, I couldn't understand you.
What? I'm sorry. I know that she said that she had an appointment with her psychiatrist who would do work on the taper with her. And I do know that she was in contact with other providers at our program, including Letitia Dukes, while I was on vacation.
And Letitia Dukes is a social worker, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. December 9th, there was another telephone encounter, it's called, right?
Yes.
And yet again, her husband, Pat, was involved with this call, right?
Yes.
So does this put Patrick up to around four times, maybe five times, that he had been involved either in person with your business or on the telephone or on the telemetry or whatever it is, computer?
I spoke with him on the phone twice. He was in one of our visits on December 6th, and it appears he was in the visit with Letitia as well.
So this would be a Rebecca Gelada telephone
yes.
encounter on December 9th, right?
Correct.
And on that occasion, Lindsay, and it says, and her husband called this writer, that'd be you, right?
Correct.
Regarding the plan to taper, correct?
Correct.
And they agree, they both agreed that Lindsay's symptoms remain too acute. What does that mean? What's acute mean?
Severe.
Did they say that she's sleeping but waking up with, let me back up. Was he telling you all of this while she sat there? She wasn't saying much in that call, conversation, was she?
I don't recall who was saying more than the other person.
Do you recall that she indicated that she wanted her husband to be involved to speak for her because she was really decompensating, right? She wasn't self-reporting and self-advocating too well for herself at that point, was she?
I just know she did have her husband on the call, and he did speak on the call.
They indicated that she was waking up with panic symptoms. Right?
Correct.
What panic symptoms? What does that mean?
Panic symptoms can be this sudden rush of intense.
It's not what can be. What did she tell you, or what did her husband tell you? Her
panic symptoms. What? Panic symptoms.
What? What were they?
Panic symptoms are racing heart, intense fear. Those are panic symptoms. Sudden rushes of intense anxiety that seem to come out of nowhere.
Okay. Is that something that you learn in school, or is that in a book? Is it in the DSM, or what? So we all have our own opinion as to what panic symptoms might be, but from a medical standpoint,
those are panic. What panic symptoms are.
Would you agree that Patrick, in this conversation, also indicated that she was having intrusive thoughts yet again? Right?
Correct.
What were the intrusive thoughts that she was having when she wakes up with panic symptoms?
I don't recall the specific intrusive thoughts. I recall asking about safety, and that she did identify having thoughts of suicide.
Well, Patrick told you that she has thoughts of suicide, right?
Lindsay as well.
Okay, so I'm asking you, what you, as an invested healthcare provider, told this woman to advise her, what your investigation revealed, if you have a patient tell you, I'm having intrusive thoughts. What were they?
I recall that they were intrusive suicidal thoughts.
And is this a frequent theme that you noted?
I don't know if it was a frequent theme that I noted, but I know that it was documented several times throughout her course of treatment with providers in my program.
So at this point, with all the providers of your program and her indications, as well as her husband's, about the number of times that she had suicidal ideation, did you prescribe more drugs for her?
At this occasion, I prescribed Valium.
You bumped her up to Seroquel to 400 milligrams, didn't you?
Yes.
Did that help? How'd that work out?
At 200 milligrams, she was able to sleep. So I felt that the manic symptoms in her mixed presentation were alleviated at 200.
So on December 12th, she sent you one of those messages. Thank you, Rebecca. December 12th. She says, for the last three nights, I've taken 2.5 milligrams of Valium and 200 of Seroquel. I have to say, I do like the way it makes me sleep deeply and soundly for about 7 or 8 hours. I don't like the way I feel in the morning. You read that to the jury for the DA, right?
Yes.
But then the rest of the sentence is, incredibly depressed and unmotivated to do anything at all. Do you remember her saying that?
Yes.
Now, you'd agree with me that that's one of the observations that you make, or symptomology of a person that's in suffering significantly from postpartum anxiety, depression. She's incredibly depressed and unmotivated to do anything, right?
Correct.
What does that mean? What does she mean by that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
When she says that she's unmotivated and is incredibly depressed, was she able to go shopping? Could she get in the car and drive? Did you know that she stopped driving?
I was not aware of that.
On December 12th, she saw Letitia Dukes. Patients reporting thoughts of SI, suicidal ideation, but no plan. She contacted Crisis over the weekend and will be starting a PHP in Norwell. What does that mean?
Partial hospitalization program.
Okay. And that's because, yet again, she's reporting the suicidal ideation, correct?
Correct.
And there's a difference between suicidal ideation and having thoughts of suicide, right? Under the DSM, is there?
There's a suicidal ideation can be a spectrum.
Okay. On December 13th, telemedicine in the perinatal behavioral unit. There was a concern about suicidal ideation. And her look underneath Edinburgh postnatal depression scale, if you have it, was now 20. It's still severe, right?
Correct.
So what did you do on that date, if you know, December 13th?
I recommended that she continue Seroquel 200 milligrams and Valium 2 milligrams.
December 19th, telemedicine with Letitia Dukes. And this is when she indicated that She was going to contact women and infants, and Letitia helped her out to do that. So she went to women and infants on the 20th, right?
Correct.
Okay. So as time went on, and she had gone to women and infants and was unable to be treated on December 20th and went home, or picked up by her husband, what was her course of treatment after that? You didn't talk to anybody at Women and Infants, right?
At that time, I did not talk to anybody at Women and Infants, but I do know that we re-referred her in a few days.
I know you already told us you re-referred her. My question is real simple, and I don't mean to be bully. I just want to ask you.
Yes.
Did you talk to anyone at Women and Infants?
No.
So, as I read the record, which is an exhibit, Women and Infants, December 20th, differential diagnosis, concern about medications, reaches out to Rebecca Gelada, no return call from Gelada. You don't recall that. You don't know what happened to her after that, do you? Other than going to McLean.
I know that she went to McLean.
Right. Do you know when she went into McLean?
At the end of December, early January.
Okay. Did you review the McLean records? Because you have access to them, right?
I do not have access to them.
You don't?
I don't.
So if you're treating a person for all of the stuff that we've talked about, and it's now apparent that things have decompensated so bad that they have voluntarily admitted her to a locked ward in a mental institution, is it important to Rebecca Gelada to find out what the diagnosis and treatment was of their patient?
Yes.
Did you find out?
I did not.
And any time you called in an ROI, any time you needed a release of information, such as a HIPAA release, she would have signed it, right?
Objection.
No rule.
Yes, would have.
You have no reason.
Speculation.
Well, not hardly.
Right, I'm going to allow that. The jury can weigh that. You can explore that on cross-examination. Redirect, I'm sorry.
From your treatment of Lindsay and her efforts to be a good patient and tell you all what her symptoms were and third-party contacts and everything, to your opinion, she would have signed a release for you to get access to pretty much anything you wanted, right?
I'm not sure if she signed a release for McLean to be able to speak with us.
Did anybody ask her? Did you ever ask her to sign a release?
I did not.
That's all I had, Your Honor.
Ms. Gelada, Lindsay Clancy was only a patient at the South Shore Perinatal Behavioral Health Clinic between November 20th and December 13th. Fair to say? Meaning November 20th is the first contact she had with Julie Paul, right?
Yes.
And December 13th is the last time that you met with her.
Yes.
And she came to that clinic not from a referral from somebody like Jennifer Tufts, correct?
Correct.
And so your information about her contact with that psychiatrist is limited to what she shared with you?
Correct.
And she never offered to you that maybe you should talk to her, did she?
Correct.
Now, you've also been asked about providing all the different medications. And if I may approach with Exhibit 1, please.
Yes, you may.
I'm going to show you the second page there. I know it's kind of small, but take your time to take a look at it. See on there that you prescribed any medications to Lindsay Clancy in January of 2023?
None.
And in fact, January 12th of 2023 is Jennifer Tufts, correct?
Correct.
January 5th of 2023, Aaliyah Goodhart, correct?
Correct.
January 16th, Jennifer Tufts?
Correct.
Jennifer Tufts for diazepam. Jennifer Tufts for diazepam. So your last prescription filled was December 22nd, 2022.
Correct.
So when counsel asked you about this chart he was reading from.
Yes.
You would agree with me that this record from CVS is what you would generally see when you pull a patient's prescription list.
Yes.
And as far as the going back through some of the medications, and you were read by counsel about on December 6th and 7th prescribing the same medication, is it common that you would change prescriptions to adjust for dosage?
Yes.
And when you start some new medications, do you give somebody an automatic 30-day supply if you're not sure if that's going to be the course of medication?
Correct.
So sometimes you're prescribing things at kind of odd dosages, right, or odd number of pills?
Yes.
So on December 6th, for the diazepam, you actually prescribed one pill?
Yes.
And then December 7th, two pills?
Yes.
And then December 9th, a different, a 5-milligram dose, 8 pills.
Yes.
And then on December 30th, I think it is, 2-milligram dose, 7 pills.
Yes.
And then the Seroquel as well, on December, or November 30th, when you first prescribed that at that low 25-milligram dose for insomnia, she was given 30 pills.
Yes.
And then when you changed the plan as of December 7th, you had to give her a new prescription for a higher dose, didn't you?
Yes.
So that's the 100 milligrams at 22 pills.
Correct.
Now, when you adjust the dosages or adjust the number of pills, do you give specific instructions on how to take the medication going forward?
Yes.
Do you expect the patient to follow those instructions and disregard the previous prescriptions?
Yes.
Now, at several points, you've indicated and counsel asked you about referrals or recommendations that Ms. Clancy go to a partial hospitalization program, right? Do you recall that line of questioning?
I do.
And does South Shore Perinatal Behavioral Health have a partial hospitalization program?
Not at this time.
And so oftentimes you have to pair or recommend places outside in other communities, correct?
Correct.
And you've talked about women and infants, and that's one of the places that you've referred and that you did, in fact, refer this patient, correct?
Yes.
You don't have an affiliation with women and infants, do you?
No.
So any information that you receive would have to come from the patient or at the patient's request. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
In regards to her visit to women and infants in December 20th, you had contact with Lindsay Clancy the next day, didn't you?
I did.
And that was through the MyChart messaging?
Yes.
And she explained to you what happened at Women and Infants?
Yes.
She gave you details about what they told her, that she wasn't going to benefit from the groups, and that when she told them about her medication history or medication issues, that they believed that she should come off Seroquel.
Yes.
So while you don't have the records of the diagnosis, you had a report from the patient about what they were recommending, didn't you?
Yes.
And as a result of that, you started a conversation with her about tapering Seroquel, didn't you?
Yes.
Were you talking to her about postpartum depression?
Let me double check, please.
Mm-hmm.
I was.
So that's when you sent the information and the mood chart, right?
Yes.
So that's November 30th, December 1st. And now by the time you get to December 7th, after having pretty significant back and forth communication with her, now you're talking with her and giving her some information about bipolar, correct?
Correct.
So upon her presentation at the clinic and her initial focus of treatment, it was for postpartum depression and anxiety, was it not?
Yes.
And as you began to have more contact with her, as you began to trial different medication regimens, is that when your differential diagnosis started to emerge?
Yes.
And you responded to that appropriately with the medication you recommended, right?
Yes.
That's why the titrating of Seroquel became a conversation. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And when you, after the Women and Infants program on December 20th, you didn't see Lindsay Clancy again in the clinic, did you? Either telehealth or in person?
No.
And the only contact you had with her was through the messages about the plan for tapering, correct?
Correct.
And while you were going to be away and not available to her, you still gave her a plan and a prescription to assist with tapering, didn't you?
I did.
Was your staff, your clinic, or your colleagues still available for her if she needed it?
Yes.
Did she reach out?
I believe that either she or Patrick did reach out on December 30th.
And that was for a higher level of care recommendations, right?
Correct.
But as far as issues with the taper, did she reach out to you or your colleagues about issues with the taper?
No.
Now, counsel went through with you a call in which Patrick and Lindsay, or Lindsay, indicated to you that she was having panic symptoms and intrusive thoughts. Do you recall that?
Yes.
In that call, did you contract for safety?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means assessing immediate safety. For example, not to speak in hypothetical, but if somebody was saying, I have a plan to kill myself, I have a knife, I am calling 911, I am sectioning that person. If somebody's saying, I'm having thoughts of suicide, okay, what are they? Do you have a plan? Do you have intent? What I recall from Lindsay is she was having thoughts of suicide. She did not disclose a plan, no intent, and her husband was aware of this as well. He was on the call.
In fact, in any of the times that you met with or had messages with Lindsay Clancy and she talked about intrusive thoughts or suicidal thoughts, did she ever articulate that she ever had a plan?
No.
Or that she ever actually had any intent of completing the act?
No.
And you're aware that she did have support in the way of her husband and her family, didn't you?
I was aware of that.
And again, intrusive thoughts, when a person tells you, a postpartum mom tells you they're having intrusive thoughts, in your training experience, in the times that you've treated moms with postpartum depression or anxiety or even psychosis, that's a fairly common complaint, right?
Yes.
And again, depressed and unmotivated, fairly common to hear those from new moms.
Yes.
And in your experience in treating individuals with postpartum psychosis, whether they hear voices or not, did you ever have any concerns based on your contact with Lindsay Clancy that she was suffering from postpartum psychosis?
I did not.
I have nothing further.
Well, it appears as though she was, doesn't it?
Objection.
Hold on. Why don't we do this? Why don't you get over there, Mr. Rankin, if you can go ahead. Let me ask you a question.
I will turn it.
All right. Anything further? All right, ma'am, you can step down. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel, could I see you over?
Sidebar.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.